looking to Genesis 3 again, and we will continue. You will remember, again by way of review here, let me do this way. You want to look at, there you go, the nature of creation. We talked about that and asked, and I began by asking, what is the nature of life? Well, I kind of would like to change that after thinking through that a little more. Instead of asking what is the nature of life, although I'm including that, I'm going to ask the question more in keeping with the text, what is the nature of being in the image of God? Okay, now the answer is the same. What was that? What does it mean to be created, at least in the sense that we are talking about it in this series that I'm doing? What does it mean to be created in the image of God? What one part are we talking about? Thank you, James. Very good. Communion. Living in communion together. Now remember, we took our key from the record there. Moves from God to us. God said, let us make man in our image. From singularity to plurality. In other words, from individuality to community. He made God. He created them. Male and female. Adam and Eve. He created them. So the idea, part, encompassed in the image of God is the idea we are individuals with the capacities of personhood, and we live in community. We live in communion, and we'll get back to that in just a second. We take our key again from the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. Now, when we talked later on, we looked at chapter 2, and we asked about what did the expression naked and unashamed meant. Okay? And we, there we go. We came through this list, or we constructed this list. It meant these things. To know contentment, to be vulnerable, to know purity, innocence, perfection, to be know freedom, to know trust, peace, acceptance, security, pleasure, care, respect, on and on. Okay. Jogging our memories again here. This is the idea of interdependence. Life as God designed it is to live together. Again, the interface of soul with soul, of having a relationship with another human being in whom I can trust fully and be accepted fully, to know absolute security. That's how God designed life. That's how the Father, the Son, and the Spirit live together, in holy communion, interdependence. We spoke of it, and we didn't look, but you can at John 17. Life as God designed it, the image of God is to be relational, it is to be connected together, it is to be interdependent. Okay? Now, having said those things, we went on then into chapter 3. Adam and Eve, at this point, well, there you go, turn from that. We ask the question, what is the nature of the temptation? Right? What is the nature of the temptation? Why would they pick that up? What would they be drawn to? When you've got everything, why would you turn from it? Okay. The nature of the image is to live in communion. Living in communion. Thank you. Some of us that weren't here? Well, how's that? Good. By the way, as an aside, for those of us who are sitting in the front here, and I'll do this for you, Marilyn, because I know you wanted to do this, but the gym night is on the 4th, not the 1st. And when Dick said the 1st, you should have seen Marilyn over there. I'm sorry. It was fun. It was fun. I tell you, she wanted to say something. All right. We're experiencing their communion together right now. And we do together. I feel such a confidence in Dick and Marilyn that I can do this. That's what we want. That's what our souls, our hearts hunger for. That kind of life. Life in communion here. Okay? But Adam and Eve turn from that, and you and I will turn from that. But we want to look at the record here. And let's begin by reading these first 6 verses, and we'll come back and talk about this for a moment, still by way of review. Beginning in verse 1 of chapter 3. Now the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Indeed, as God said, you shall not eat from any tree of the garden." And the woman said to the serpent, "From the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but from the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or touch it, lest you die." And the serpent said to the woman, "You surely shall not die. For God knows that in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. You will be like God, knowing good and evil." When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate. And she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. We see at this moment Adam and Eve turning from creation, from image, from life, from communion to something else. How and why did this take place? We talked last week about the basis of this temptation. The devil, Satan, the serpent, raises a basic suspicion about God. What is the suspicion about God that's raised? You and I experience this perhaps daily. Weekly, monthly. What suspicion is raised about God? Yes, sir. Okay. Is that what you're going to say, Dan? Okay. It would be the same thing. His word, his integrity, his honesty, and his goodness. Okay? If we begin to doubt those, we're in a heap of trouble. Where are you going to turn? If God's not true, where are you going to turn? If what God has declared is not what I need to live by, where are you going to go? I remember vividly what it's like to live without truth. I was 24 when I came to the Lord. And the anxiety and the agony in my soul of not knowing what nothing made sense. So the first suspicion is about God, his integrity and his goodness. And then there's a suspicion raised about me. What's that? Or about us. Okay. Let's build on that just a little bit. The idea we're not complete is good, yes? Okay. You're not as good as you could be. Notice down there again in verse 5. Okay? For God knows that in the day you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God. The idea is that something has been withheld from them. We notice that as well in verse 3, where the woman says, "You shall not eat from it or touch it." There is this sense of restrictiveness about how God is dealing with them. That God isn't really good. He doesn't really have their best interests at heart. Rather, what we see is that he's withholding something in order that he can remain God where he is. And that our lot in life is really not as good as it could be. What we're really on the slide is we begin to doubt God's goodness, and then we have questions about whether I've got it as good as I could. I had somebody come to me this week, after last week, and they had experienced some little difficulty with their automobile. And this issue came into their mind at that point. You know, if only I had a better car, or if I had a car like somebody else, or something. I don't know exactly what went through his mind, but you and I are confronted with those things constantly. The possibility, finally, as we pointed out, of more. Of being and having more than we do. Now, does that ring anybody's bell? Does anybody ever experience that in your life? No? Yes? I haven't done this before. Could I see a show of hands of who's experienced this? You've been tempted with the idea of being or having more. I'm serious. How many? Good. As I was feeling awfully alone up here. Good. Yeah. Well, look with sort of a jaundiced eye at the goodness of God and what he has provided, we're tempted with the idea that there's maybe something more out there for us. That's in some measure, how it is the devil took this and seeks to reel us in. He has her questioning her place, and he's got her at this point looking somewhere else. That's what will happen to us. Right? Now, that's reviewed. Any comments or questions about that up to this point that you want to say? Carol. I think the key there is content. Whether we got more or less, Paul said there in Philippians that I've learned to be content in whatever state. And good, thank you. Mm-hmm. Good, that's exactly right. They got more, but they got more than they learned. Yes, Bert. Right. Mm-hmm. 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 You know, I never even thought about that. I'm sorry? Right. Well, I'm not sure at this point. Now, this is just my thoughts right off the cuff. I'm not sure that words like that, perhaps evil had very much content or had no content. I don't know that it had to. I think the whole idea that there was something else out there, mysterious and vague, was enough to intrigue, was enough to charm. It didn't have to be real clear and specific. In fact, it isn't. Okay? Well, to be honest with you, I don't know how to respond any further than that at this point. I look at it as something, he's using specific words, but the concept behind them would be something he would have no knowledge of. Right. Right. So, they don't communicate something specific to her. All they do is intrigue her with the idea that there is something out there I don't know anything about. There is more for me. Okay? That's all I'm trying to say at this point. Yes, Bill. Yes, it is. Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. Right. That's what makes it so insidious, so keen, is that God does it. The devil uses those God-given attributes or qualities and perverts them. No. Right. Right, I agree with you. I'm just saying, in terms of the devil's manipulation here, that's something he will fly up on. He'll use. Peter? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. 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 Right. That's a good point, and I'm glad you raised it. I had toyed with the idea of spending some time in verse 6 and chose not to simply because of the lack of time that we have. But there, and it, this buttresses what Jerry is saying here. In verse 6 it says, when the woman saw the tree was good for food, in other words, that in terms of her own appetite, that it was delight to her eyes, it was something that brought pleasure, and the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from it. In other words, there is something, there is a responsibility, there is a mechanism, an apparatus, a faculty within her upon which this temptation found fertile soil. So there was responsibility, yes. By the way, if you look at 1 John chapter 2, and I can't remember exactly the verse, we see a corollary to this. But I'd like to go on now and say that when we talk about the nature of the temptation, the theology behind it, the psychology behind it, this is the basis of, but what is this more that they were looking for? Okay? So, with me, would you, for just a moment, look at verse 5. It says there in chapter 3, verse 5, that your eyes will be opened and that you will be like God. Okay? The temptation was to become familiar with and have power over mysteries that lay beyond them. As I said last week, it was a fantasy that's almost impossible to resist. The point here is to attain something more in order to be truly happy. Well, the core of that appeared to me that they would be like, and I'm going to say, a God. Because the language here is not in the sense that they're going to take God's place, but they will be in the category of God. And I'm asserting to you this morning, affirming that that lies behind you and I in the temptation that we face. Now, but what is this more? I want to nail this down if we can. I want you to turn with me to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah 14. And I'm not going to dwell on, as we look at this, and this is the king of Babylon. But behind this, I think, lies the mentality of the devil, behind it, the mentality of all rebellion in the universe. And what I would like you to do with me is to read these couple of verses, verses 13 to 14. Back up here. There we go. Isaiah 14, 13 and 14. Begin in 12. How you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn. You have been cut down to the earth. You have weakened the nation. But you said in your heart, this is the point we want to catch, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. And I will sit on the mount of assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. Now there's a series of expressions that are used here in the text. And I'd like you, or we together, to answer this question. How is it, now this is a picture, I think, in some senses, of the temptation of the boast, of the assertion, of the rebellion, whatever you want to call it, of the devil. And I would like to ask this question, how is it, or how did Satan conceive of godlikeness in these verses? When he thought about what does it mean to be God, how did he think about it? In what terms? What are those phrases raised? Pardon? Okay, I will. We'll come back to that, Otto. Okay? He says, I will. 5 times he does. Think of these expressions, however. Ascend to heaven. Raise my throne. Sit on the Mount of Assembly. By the way, Psalm 48:2 tells us that's where the throne of God is. Okay? Ascend above the height. What's he speaking of in those verses? Good. Good. All right. Let's write these things. Power. Exaltation. What else? What does throne mean? Authority. Good. What goes along with authority? That's true. You know, I never thought of that. All right, I'll put that in there. To be worshipped? Girl. We got that right at the top there, girl. Right. What else? Addition. Good. Pride. That's kind of in a category all over here by itself. Well, notice that. When he says, I will make myself like the Most High. I'm sorry? Equality? Yeah. Okay. Rebellion? Yeah. I want to come back to what Ray said there. Okay. Boy, isn't that the truth? A-U-D-A-C-I-T-Y? Is that right? There's sure a difference between writing up here and on my desk in my office. Equality. Could I substitute another word there? The idea of, a little more technical term, to usurp, to take the place of, okay, to be equal to, or even better, I think it's probably, okay? What else? To be king. To be king means to do what? To rule. Good. Control. Okay? Oh, that's what you meant by it. Oh, okay. All these hand signs, I'm trying to follow them here. Control. I threw this one in. Self-sufficiency. Okay? Not again, I spelled it correctly. To be self-sufficient. As the devil thought about what it means to be God, he thought of God-likeness in these terms. Okay? Am I stretching the text there? Do we see that? Yes? No? Yeah. Good. All right. His is a direct assault on the throne of God itself. Okay? Now, that's not how you and I function. If I said boldly to you, behind every temptation that you experience is this desire for you to usurp God's place and to be like Him, you say, that's not true. And I would agree with you. Okay? Remember, when we talked about earlier, to be like God, in the devil's language, meant to take His place. Okay? To usurp. Use that term again. For you and I, it is to be a God. And there's a subtlety there. Okay? And I want to talk about that subtlety here for a moment. This is what, by the way, something I want to point out that will tie in with what Bill was saying earlier. Bill said that you and I are created to inquire. We are created with the power of choice. Okay? Things are laid out before us. All right. There's something else, however, that the devil takes a hold of that we in ourselves, that appeals to us, that's native within us as in the terms of the way we are controlled, as people created. When God created Adam and Eve, He created them in His image. And you said this morning in the breaking of bread, I think it was Otto that said, and Glenn did as well, that God not only saves and redeems us, but He does something else. He has a will and a desire and a plan for us. What is that will, desire, and plan? That's all. Become and form to the image of Jesus Christ. Okay? No one else or nothing else in creation was created in the image of God. Inherent within us as human beings is a desire to be like God. That's part of being in the image. To exercise the capacities of personhood and to be like our Creator in His image and likeness, His stamp upon us. That is a good desire that each of us has. Okay? But like so many things, it's a good thing gone bad. I'm saying that's a thing that in terms of how the world, the flesh, and the devil work against us, how it can hook us again and seduce us and seek to draw us in. You and I want to be like God in a right sense. I'm asserting to you this morning that I feel that that's something that the devil in this case is appealing to within the constitution of Eve. This is what makes it so fiendish. One of the things. Now, in what terms, however, going back to us and to Adam and Eve, were Adam and Eve tempted to be as God? I want you to look at these things again, and let's do it this way. Look at categories here. There's there's some terms that are repeated over and over again. We're answering or seeking to answer the question, how is it that Adam and Eve were tempted? Now, Isaiah 14 talks about the devil. But behind the devil and his ploy to say you'll be like God lies something of this conception. What is it that they were seeking that I feel is the prerogative and belongs to God only? That's what I'm driving at. Something that we reach for that we shouldn't. But it lies here, I think. Okay? So as we look at this, what are terms that are used over and over again? No, in these phrases here. I will. Thank you. That's the first one. Five times. What is I will speak of? When somebody says, or when he's saying, I will, what's that telling you? Right? Okay. Choosing what? Let's go beyond just the choosing, the action. Choosing what? Self-determination, self-will. Right. I'm going to put that right here. Self-will. Something I'm saying, Adam and Eve were confronted with, tempted by, was self-will rather than God's will. Self-determination rather than what God had determined. Self-governing rather than the government of God over their lives. And you and I, when we are faced with a temptation, I'm saying, we think in these terms. Don't you struggle at times? Not my will, that I be done? Yeah. Okay. I will. Any other comments about that? Alright. What else? There's certain phrases that are used or words that are used that communicate something here. We've already touched on this a little bit, but I want to emphasize it again. Okay. Ascending, raising, a mountain, ascending. What direction are those words telling? Where are we going? Up. Right. So, I'm saying that Adam and Eve were confronted with a temptation to what? In terms of these kinds of terms. To be elevated. Right. To you, sir, I have a hard time feeling that at their place right there, that they were consciously wanting to usurp God's place. I don't sense that in the text. Rather, what I see is, and Eric said it, is the idea of elevation, exaltation. All of these words, how did I write this in? Every word, as I read in one of these commentaries, there's a phrase that caught my eye, every word emphasizes height. To be elevated or to be exalted above. Okay? Right here. Self-exaltation. Now, good. One more thing. In this expression here. What do we have there? What is he saying? Here he's saying, I'm going to do it. Okay? And I'm going to raise myself up. What's he finally saying here? Alright, pardon, I think two. Okay. What's this word doing? Good. Eric? Okay. Good. Good. Right. Did everybody hear that? No? Okay. Eric was saying that these are things that he recognizes as he's been looking at them, that are things that are inherent in us and that are not naturally good, but it's a matter of, and how did you put that? Where they come from? The origin of them. Okay? Dick said, when I say, I will make myself, use an expression, self-sufficiency. And we talked about that down here. Self-sufficiency. Right? What I see there, when I said, if I said to you, I'm going to make myself a god, make myself to be a god, what do I call that? Self? It's a pretty bald term, but I'm going to use it, self-deification. Now in this case, remember, we're talking about small g god, not God's place, not seeking to be the god, but a god, to take upon ourselves prerogatives and abilities that lie, that belong to only God himself. Now, this is the heart. This is the lie that they chose to believe. The belief, now listen to me carefully, because I want to try and draw all this together at this point. It is the belief that I can get there myself. That I can exist without God. It is the belief, the lie, that I can find life apart from the Creator. That's what you and I buy into. That life, the more that I want, lies somewhere beyond what I have. And that I can get there myself. Turn with me for just a moment, since you're in Isaiah, just over to Jeremiah chapter 2. Jeremiah chapter 2. And look with me at verse 13 for just a moment. Jeremiah 2 and verse 13. For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, to hew for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water. That's when you have to look closer to the kind of terms that you and I live in. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, the fountain of life, the source of life. They have forsaken how I've designed life and what life is to be. And they have turned to something more. And the idea is here, to hew for themselves, to do it by themselves. Cisterns, and the pathetic thing is, they're broken cisterns. Now everybody knows what a cistern is. It's a place in the rock in the Middle East in which water was collected to be used. And they're broken. It's the idea that I don't need the fountain of living waters. I can do it myself. Get this water of life together myself. Right. Right. Good. Very good. Now, think with me here for just a moment. Theologically, you have two kinds of attributes in God. You have what are called the incommunicable attributes and the communicable attributes. Okay? We'll call them here. Incommunicable. Communicable. Things that God chooses to communicate to his creatures and those he holds to himself. Incommunicable attributes are all the omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, thank you. Eternality, okay? Being infinite, having all power or authority. I'm going to use that word authority here. And on and on and on. Things that he communicates are things like mercy, things that you and I partake of faithfulness, compassion, goodness, kindness, so on and so forth. What we see is that we are tempted with something about godlikeness that's not ours. And we feel that somehow life can be found if we can partake of those. This is what Lincoln's saying. What has been withheld from us are things that only belong to God, are part of His essence of who He is. Now, I want to go back here. Okay, good point here. I'm not saying we want to be omniscient or omnipresent. That's not what I'm saying. Instead, what I am saying is that these things, okay, I'm saying in terms of things about God, things that we shouldn't, that are not ours, are the things that we're tempted with, the things that belong to deity in a general sense. I'm not thinking that I want to be omniscient or omnipotent. But the prerogatives that belong to God because He is those things, that I can run my own life, are the things that we're tempted with. In fact, when we go to the rest of the chapter, in terms of the nature of fallenness, there are two things that you and I are smitten with. Two things, the way we work out the fall. One is self-management. I can take care of my own life. And the second is self-protection. Those are the two things I'm busy about in my life. That's the nature of fallenness. That's what I'm talking about here. I'm saying that, let me approach it from a different direction if I can for just a second. I was reading here this morning. I was thinking in John chapter 4, the woman at the well, he says to her, if you were to ask me, I would have given you living water. In John chapter 7, make sure I quote this correctly, He says, if any man is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture said, from his innermost being shall flow rivers of living water. What is being communicated in the redemption process, what God has done is to point us again to where the source of life is. It's told us that the waters of life, the fountain of life is in, and given us a capacity to choose that and to want that. What I'm saying is that Adam and Eve choose to turn away from that and to seek to appropriate them to themselves abilities which only God can have, and as Lincoln has said, when they take upon themselves, become self-destructive. It's not the idea of being omnipotent or omniscient. It's the idea of self-governing, of seeking to be exalted, of seeking to run my own life. Yes, ma'am. Yes. I wouldn't, in a technical sense, I don't know, but just in terms of our discussion, I'd say, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I stress the point, like a God, not to take God's place, but that I be a God. Now, let me go on here. We've got just a few minutes, and I want to hang on to this one. All right. The heart of it is these things. Being a God, all these things we talked about. It is a self-life, self-will, self-exaltation, self-dedication, self-determination, self-governing. Okay? We turn at this point from being relational and connected and interdependent. This is life. This is our role as a creature. This is how God has determined we should live, to be content within that. So listen to Dick and Marilyn in the joy and wonders of 30, 40 years of marriage relationship. To experience some of the communion of their soul. To be together. I experienced communion with several people yesterday in meetings that I had with people from the body. Of our souls coming together and being blessed by the communion of sharing things about God and what we'd like to see happen and what is happening. We turn from that instead of being relational to being exalted. And again, that's a fairly bald term, but I want to help us think about that here in just the last few minutes. from being connected to being autonomous. I can do it myself. From being interdependent to being independent. Yes, sir. Okay. Right. Exactly. Yep. The fall, in my understanding, took place before she took that fruit. Yeah, because they're not capable of it. That's the point. And we want to take unto ourselves things that we're not capable of handling, of using. Okay? Whether he intended that or not, if we take the account at face value, it doesn't appear to be so. But that's at that point in time and space. If we take God's redemptive purposes from eternity to eternity, yes, then that was part of what he was doing. That they eventually come to that. On God's part, that's fine. I mean, it doesn't make any difference to me. That's not really my point. I mean, that's not a point I'm wanting to argue or even bring up at this point. Okay. Godlikeness was given to us. It means image and communion. Now, the irony of this is they already had that. And they turned from it. The temptation is to be a God and to be self-determining, self-deifying, self-willed, self-exalted. What I'm saying is that when we are tempted with something, and let me, now that would be a point where I could raise perhaps a specific example of this, like Jerry's asked. Where I would choose this path over, for instance, I say something unkind or ungracious to someone. I'm not really loving in my attitude toward them. I'm not as affirming, not as caring. I'm thinking of a real person in my life right now. And I'm really doing this. There's a block inside of me preventing me from doing this. My wife comes to me. She sees those things. Very gently she confronts me about them. She says, I see these attitudes. They're telling me something about your heart. That you are not experiencing communion, rightness with this person. You are holding yourself aloof from them. You were saying you don't need them. No, she didn't say that. But that's what's going on. Now, I have two choices at that point. I can say, I don't need them, and I'm not going to deal with it. It's going to be my will, not yours. Or I can say, you're right. I do need that person, and I have done wrong. I have not loved them. I have not cared for them. I have not been kind to them. I have not affirmed them in the ways that I should. Doesn't make any difference what that person's like. I have not done right. This is a real thing that I'm struggling with in my own life right now. That's as nearest to a temptation as I can come to. So there's all kinds of others. Now, how am I going to use my money? That passage I read to my daughter was Matthew chapter 5. He who asks you for your coat or your cloak, give him your coat also. He who asks you to go 1 mile, go two. I'm looking at my Christianity and I'm saying, God, am I willing to turn that way? Am I willing to walk that extra mile? Is it my will or yours?